You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Into the batter's box, a member of the Broadcast Hall of Fame. He's conducted more than 60,000 interviews. And that's in the Guinness Book of World Records, by the way. Many of them on CNN for 25 years in primetime. And he can still be seen on TV, sitting right behind home plate at Dodger Stadium. Here is huge Dodger fan number one. Los Angeles, you're on the air. Hello. Here's Larry King. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed.
You were outspoken during the season, during the offseason, as the Dodgers seemed to be in a state of inertia. And now that they're in spring training, assess for us how they did this winter. Are you still critical?
I'm very close friends with Stan, and he's a terrific guy, and we go back to the Atlanta days. We both worked for Ted Turner for many years. I think Stan is a terrific guy. I have not formally met our general manager, and neither of the two general managers and the guy they got from Toronto. So I don't know them, but I have a lot of faith and trust in Stan. I'm very friendly with him, and I'm a Dodger fan. I'm a ticket holder. I do programs for them. I was disappointed that they didn't sign up with Greinke. I think we should have gotten Hamels from Philadelphia. They had a terrible, trading deadline in the end of July. And in the winter, I was just disappointed. It looks like we're a staff of left-handers. But I'm shocked that Vegas has us picked to win the Western Division, which... And so a lot of people are picking them. I don't know where that's coming from, because I don't see it, but a lot of people say that the Dodgers, I got questions in center field. Will our center fielder hit? Is Grandal okay from the shoulder surgery?
He had a very tough second half. He had, I think, 172.
The shortstop's going to be terrific. I have no doubt about that. We're basing it a lot on rookies and who's going to come. I think the problem with it is this is probably my age. I'm 82. Dodgers haven't won a World Series since 88. So when I hear that they're building, that don't help me much. It's okay for my kids that they're building, but I'm not in the building mode. I want to win now. And from the statements the general manager made recently, it looks like they're not looking to win a World Series in 2016. And I think there are better teams. I think the Cubs are better. I think the Mets are better. The Giants are probably a little better. Arizona's close by better. Certainly the Pirates might be better. There's better teams in the National League. So I can't see us pegged as winning. I sure hope we win. I'm going to be there rooting for him. I'm a Dodger. I bleed blue. I'm just not as optimistic as other people are.
Howie Kendrick returns.
Glad of that.
Terrific, terrific bat. I was surprised that there really didn't seem to be much of a market for him, Larry.
But he got caught, as he said, in that... kind of ridiculous rule, which I don't think will be in the new collective bargaining agreement. Where they make that offer of $15 million for 1 year. Right. You take it. If you don't take it, you're then a free agent. But the club that signed you loses a first-round draft pick. Right. And Kendrick is surprised that suddenly a first-round draft pick is more important than a proven major leaguer. In other words, wouldn't you love a first-round draft pick who would be as good as Howie Kendrick?
Right.
And you've already got Howie Kendrick. So I don't understand why you would be afraid to lose a first-round draft pick to sign someone like Howie Kendrick. It don't make sense to me.
And across the way, you referenced him a moment ago, Corey Seager, 986 OPS in 27 games. And I saw his first game, Larry. I happened to be in San Diego and when he came up, debuted that night. And there didn't seem to be any scare in the kid. He seemed like from the very first moment he belonged, and he played so well for Los Angeles.
Yeah, I hear his brother's terrific, too, in Seattle. Some insiders tell me they think he's going to wind up a third baseman. He's very tall, and they say he's a terrific fielder. You know, I haven't seen enough of him, but I respect the scouts there, and they think he's a can't miss. I hope we do it, man. The National League's very tough. I think look like the Cubs are the best team. I'm worried for my squad. I hope we do it.
What was it like watching the last couple of years? Clayton Kershaw, who certainly seems to be Larry Cooperstown bound, Zach Greinke, 51-15, 2.30 earned run average in his time in Los Angeles. Perhaps comparing them to Koufax and Drysdale is unfair. You've seen all the Dodger pitchers. Koufax certainly is mythical. But what it must have been like for you to be in the first row at Dodger Stadium watching these guys throw in every five days.
And Kershaw loved each other. Greinke told me many times that he's never seen anyone like Kershaw, that Kershaw had all the ability in the world. Greinke, I compare mostly to Greg Maddux. Great control, never seen the middle of the plate, an assortment of pitches, fastball okay in 93, 94, smart as a whip. He's a savant. He knows every player in the major leagues. He knows all the college players. He is more than just a great pitcher, Greinke. He's an asset to your team. He's going to be a general manager. I mean, I know he's going to be a general manager that doesn't speak to the press. He's very shy. But he'll have another guy speak to the press, but no one will be as good as evaluating talent as Zach Greinke. And so he's an addition more than just a great pitcher, and he's going to make Arizona a major contender.
Larry King is with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball, the podcast. So happy to have you with us. Yasiel Puig had recurring hamstring injuries last year, only played 79 games, Larry, as you know, and his batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging percentage has declined in each of the past 2 years. But if he plays up to the promise that he displayed when he first came to the major leagues, there is no telling what a huge asset he becomes for the Dodgers from the right side of the plate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if he could turn it around, that will be a tremendous plus, and I think the experts think he will turn it around. He's lost a lot of weight. He appears to have a much better attitude. He certainly has a world of ability. But, you know, I'm 82 years old, so Fred, Eddie, I go back longer than you. And so I have seen in my life can't-miss people that missed. Wunderkinds that weren't wunderkinds. I remember Clint Hartung came up with the New York Giants, hit a bunch of home runs in spring training in the early 50s. Clint Hartung couldn't miss, can't miss, absolute world wonder, ninth wonder of the world. He wound up as a middle-inning relief pitcher. So you never know. And that's the wonderful thing about baseball. I think it's the best sport, is that everything you think is going to happen doesn't. The pundits don't know what the pundits are often wrong. It's a game. It's athletic chess. So much depends on little things. I learn something new every time I go to a baseball game.
That's the beauty of the sport.
I spent hours in dugouts with Earl Weaver learning baseball from a master, and he didn't know it, and he learned all the time. So that's what makes it. Baseball's off season is as interesting as its season. I love hockey. You can't get together an hour after a hockey game and discuss the game. It goes to, you know, you can't discuss it. But baseball, I could take any game and go for 2 hours.
Sure, of course.
So it has that magic about it, and I love the game. I loved it all these years. I was at Jackie Robinson's first game. I interviewed him twice. I feel an association with the team. The Dodgers are really, and I've inculcated that into. I have two young boys. They're both terrific baseball players. Chance is 17. Cannon's 16. Chance is a pitcher. Cannon's an infielder. They grew up with the Dodgers. They have more knowledge about baseball than I do. They play it every day.
That's great.
Chance is working right now with Tom House. Mm-hmm. He's a great, great pitching instructor.
Yes, he is.
And so I live it all the time. It's all around me, Ed. Baseball surrounds my life.
And speaking of your life, which goes back to Brooklyn, I want you to take a moment, and it's almost unfair to ask you the question, but I'm going to anyway. Growing up in Brooklyn, then now here in Los Angeles, you have heard the beginning and the sunset of the great Vin Scully's career. Yeah. What has this guy meant to you through the years?
Well, I remember his first game. I was listening. He did one inning a game. The first time I heard him was in football. He did the Harvard-Yale game for Red Barber's Saturday afternoon college football roundup. And I heard this young man. Then Red introduced him to the baseball broadcast, young man from Fordham. He did one inning a game, and he learned at Red Barber's feet. And Red Barber was the greatest of all time, in my opinion. There'd never be another Red Barber. And Scully learned from that, and of course, he's a great storyteller. The voice is exceptional, the timbre of his voice, the fact that he treats every game with a kind of reverence. I remember once years ago I was visiting Los Angeles before I lived here, and the Dodgers were, I think, in seventh place. And it was an August afternoon. They were playing San Diego. And I got Scully on the radio, and you would have thought it was the World Series. He gives his all to everything he does. He is a magician of the microphone. He was born to do what he does, and he's going to be missed. They're going to replace him with a three-man booth, which is the only way you can replace him.
Right.
So they're not going to have one man with all that pressure on him, which is a smart thing to do.
Sure.
And, certain people are not replaceable, and you put too much pressure on someone stepping into those shoes. And he's a raconteur, you know. I mean, he's just a wonderful wordsmith with wonderful stories. His age shows a little. It shows in all of us. But there's nothing like turning on a game. I see it in my kids, you know. Scully's in their brain.
That's a great place for him to be. And how a shame it is that this television dispute continues in Los Angeles now.
You know, we have the lowest television audience in the major leagues.
Right. You're a lucky guy that you go to every game. That's really become the only way to see the Dodgers for such a great percentage of the fan base.
They're not on DirecTV, so I have Time Warner Cable plugged in at home. So I get to see them, but more people go to the games than watch them. The Dodgers have the largest home and road attendance in baseball and the lowest television audience. I think the average television audience of Dodger games is under 30,000.
Wow, and they've just cut the number, as you know, of spring training games that they're going to telecast. Let's talk about the dugout for a second. What do you think of Don Mattingly? Were you surprised that he left? And your thoughts about Dave Roberts?
I love Don personally and as a ball player and as a manager. I thought he was growing. I think Miami made a great pick. His coaches went down there with him, which is a good sign. I was sorry we lost him, but he had come to a point where I think it was time. There's a certain time when you know it's time to go, and it was time to go, and I hear nothing but great things about Dave Roberts. I'm going to go to spring training in a couple of weeks and hope to spend some time with him. I met him on a couple of occasions, but I've never had a long conversation with him. I hear he's going to be terrific. He had the greatest stolen base in the history of baseball. And he's going to be, off of what I hear, a terrific player's manager. But so is Mattingly. You know, you learn as you go along. He's got new coaches. Davey Lopes is now in Washington. The other coaches went with Mattingly. So it's a whole new thing here. But new is not bad, you know. The only the only sure thing in life is change, and we'll see. But I'm anxiously awaiting what Roberts will do.
Whom in your life have you disliked more, the Giants or the Yankees?
I'd say, well, I have to make some exceptions. Derek Jeter has been very nice to me, and I considered George Steinbrenner a friend and a supporter of my charity. But I'd say the Yankees. I hate the Yankees more. I've gotten to now sort of not hate the Giants. One, we're not in the same city. You know, they're up in San Francisco. They're really nice guys. Bruce Bochy is a terrific guy. Larry Bear is one of the nicest people I know. People who run the team. They got a beautiful stadium. My sons hate them. I mean, hate them.
Yeah. It's been passed down from generation to generation.
I said to Chance, you want to be a big league ball player, what if the Giants draft you? He didn't know what he'd do. I don't know what I'd do. That's how much. But I, the Yankees, just because we always thought they were lucky. When we were kids, you thought you had to wear a tie to go to Yankee Stadium. We thought God was rooting for the Yankees. He put pebbles in the infield where the balls would take bad bounces. We thought they were lucky. We hated pinstripes. We hated the friends who were Yankee fans. We thought they were bourgeois. They were above it all. You know, oh, we're the Yankees. Oh, the New York Yankees.
and they were awaiting the winner of the Dodger-Giant playoff in 1951 with Bobby Thompson hitting off of Ralph Branca. And you have told the story about walking the streets of Brooklyn.
Yep.
And everybody had their windows were open, and they had their radios, and you could walk and still hear the game.
Yeah, you could follow the whole game, and it's the only time I thought of suicide in my life. And later, I emceed a dinner, 40 years later, in which Thompson and Branca were being honored. And they were all the living members of the Giants and Dodgers of 51. And when I called Thompson and Branca up to the podium, I looked Thompson squarely in the face and said, I still hate you. That was the saddest moment of my life, and now we later learned that the Giants had a guy in the outfield who was signaling the pitches. There's been a book on that. I'm looking right now at a picture that Ralph Branca autographed to me, in which he signed it, "The Giants Stole the Pennant." But that was the emotion created by those two teams. I mean, that was hatred. You define hatred. That was Giants-Dodgers.
You never stepped away from the Dodgers, as so many people did, Larry, when they left to go to the other coast.
I left, too. I was down in Miami.
Right.
To break in.
Right.
And I started rooting for both the Dodgers and the Orioles because I watched all those Orioles train in Miami. I watched Ripken come up, and Murray, and all those wonderful teams, and Earl Weaver. And then when I moved to Washington, the closest team was Baltimore. So I went and watched Oriole games,
mm-hmm.
and I still root for the Orioles and the Dodgers. My wish would be a Dodger-Oriole World Series. I would root for the Dodgers to win. There was a World Series when I was in Miami, and I did root for the Orioles because I had lost a little contact with the Dodgers, and the Orioles swept them.
In 66, right.
Jim Palmer won 2-0. Palmer remembers every pitch in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was happy the Orioles won because I had lost a little contact. But I still had Dodger blue in me. And of course, when I moved to Los Angeles 19 years ago and had children and took them to Dodger games, and the love rekindled.
But as you know, so many people felt abandoned by the Dodgers' move from Brooklyn, and later became Mets fans.
It wasn't O'Malley's fault.
No, it was not.
It was the Parks Commissioner Moses. O'Malley wanted to put the Dodgers right where the Brooklyn Nets now play. Ed, I got to run.
Larry, thank you so much.
Anytime,
Eddie. Thank you so much.
I'll see you in New York in April.
Good.
You got it, baby.
Great to have you. That is Larry King. Trivia question for you. Which three players hit 500 homers but never struck out 85 times in the season? This week in history, Ted Williams got off to a bad start on March 1st, 1954, when he broke his collarbone in his first spring practice with the Red Sox. He wouldn't return until mid-May. On March 1, 1969, Mickey Mantle retired at age 37. He told the press he probably should have retired at age 33. He finished with more than 2,400 hits, hit 536 home runs, and was bothered for years that his lifetime average had dipped in his later years under 300, and he finished at 298. On March 3, 1984, Peter Ueberroth, chairman of the Los Angeles Olympic Organizing Committee, was elected commissioner of baseball, scheduled to take office after the Summer Games in October of that year. On March 4, 1976, baseball is saved in San Francisco. The Giants, apparently headed to Toronto, are saved by Bob Lurie and Bud Herseth, who buy the club for $8 million to stay put. $8 million to buy the San Francisco Giants. On March 5, 1966, the player reps elect Marvin Miller, assistant to the president of the United Steelworkers, and is elected as executive director of the Players Association. All Marvin Miller will do is change baseball history. And to me, it's a disgrace that he's not in the Hall of Fame. On March 5, 1973, Yankee pitchers Fritz Peterson and Mike Kekich arrive in spring training and call a press conference to announce the biggest trade in baseball history. They are trading wives, children, cars, and even dogs. More about this on next week's show. Trivia answer to the question, which three players hit 500 home runs but never struck out as much as 85 times in a season? The answer, Mel Ott, Ted Williams, and Gary Sheffield. So that'll do it for us on MLB.com. If you're listening on the move, thanks for the ride and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.